This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, April 15th, the Ides of April, apparently, and 2021. An interesting, very interesting session with both what's going on in China. We have to mention China because we had it poking at the lows for the cycle, lows for the year, just managing to rise a little bit into the end of the session just before we started this podcast around the 200-day moving average. Certainly worth looking at China when you have such a contrast with other global markets, and you're seeing the tightness in liquidity there and in policy as they're afraid of overheating and the contrast. Although we did see a pretty ugly session as well in the U.S., you can never tell overnight. It seems like the U.S. futures always rebound in overnight trading, but it was especially hard hit on the NASDAQ 100, which we've got on the first slide in today's presentation, slide two, actually, after the intro slide. And, kind of interesting because it engulfs the previous day's pretty solid rally. And I suppose, Peter, a lot of this wrapped up in the somewhat disappointing Coinbase IPO, where if you take it where we are from the day's highs, you could argue that Coinbase is in a bear market, tongue-in-cheek, everything else. What's your take on yesterday's session and all this Coinbase hullabaloo?
Yeah, well, thanks for the introduction there, John. Fascinating session in many ways. I want to put the attention to slide three as well, because you can see what actually happened yesterday in the NASDAQ. So it was very much driven by mega caps. So mega cap has been doing quite well months to date. And there was just basically a pullback in yesterday's session. So that's the main reason behind the fallout in NASDAQ. And you're correct. We have the Coinbase IPO, which was also part of it. It's sold off. I think we should talk about that in a few minutes, because you mentioned China. We have mentioned China before. They run it very tight. They are making noises about bubble risk, and they want to deleverage the system, etc. I mean, this is really key for emerging markets, because emerging market equities was looking so strong earlier this year, and with China sort of not on a strong footing here, it's going to be really interesting and something that is key to watch, because they are so important for the world and the world impulse. And then on slide three, which China is also important for Europe. And as we've talked about, Europe continues to be in this very tight trading range, at least if you look at the stocks 50 futures. And as we speak right now, I think actually we're trying to push through that 3,933 level, which have been the key resistance levels now for a couple of times, and I think the probability is stake in favor of a positive breakout, so a breakout higher and momentum building in Europe. Also because we had a very strong session yesterday in the commodity sector, as you can see as well on slide three, up almost 2%. So that was bets on inflation, but also bets on a cyclical upswing in the economy. So, and that should favor Europe. And that's just finally, John, before we maybe talk about Coinbase. Again, India is getting worse and worse in India. It's definitely one of the hardest hit countries in the world, probably more hard hit than Brazil, because of the official versus unofficial numbers there. And India has been quite weak, as you can see for this month, Indian equities. And my big worry with India is that if they don't control the outbreak, that there will be so many cases that the probability that we suddenly get some very nasty mutation out of India that could go global, that I think is a key worry for everyone involved in this.
Yeah, let's hope not. This COVID, the market's very much trying to get to the other side of COVID. I think a lot of us are as well, psychologically, in the countries where the vaccination is rolling out aggressively and our hopes for a fairly normal summer. But that obviously needs to be tracked. I actually want to jump over to you, Althea, on Peter mentioned emerging markets there. And you've got an intriguing question on slide 12, where you've talked a lot about the incredible sort of risk willingness in the junk space, just reaching for yield out there. But you've got a question about emerging market sovereigns in for bond investors. So take us through what your thinking is there.
Yes, John. If you go on slide 12, you see on the graph on the left, you have the Bloomberg Barclays Emerging Market Sovereign Index. and this it's in blue. And while in orange, you have the Bloomberg Barclays US Corporate High Yield Index. And if you can see, right now, emerging market US dollar sovereigns are offering a higher yield than US corporate junk bonds. So the question here is junk still worthwhile, or should we buying emerging market? My take right now, and I will be writing about it later today, is that emerging markets are quite risky, especially if we look at sovereigns, because many have been buying emerging market on the back of the commodity rally. But the reality is that governments had ballooning debt. They have seen a deterioration of international reserves throughout the crisis. And most of all, the recovery will be delayed because the vaccination pace is not as fast as in the US or in Europe. Well, in some cases, we had a fast vaccination, but in a majority of the cases, especially commodity exporters, they are still quite slow into vaccinating. So the problem here is that I think that for investors, it's worthwhile to be positioned where there is going to be a recovery, which right now it's going to be in the US, especially as we get towards summer.
All right. And also, Peter mentioned the commodity comeback yesterday. Ola, we had a pretty big move in, not to say least, in crude oil. And it looked like it was linked to very much with the U.S. Supply situation, or the inventory report out yesterday afternoon, or afternoon for us here in Europe anyway.
That's right, John. We've had a couple of days now with price supportive news. We got the oil market reports now out of the way, both OPEC and the IEA. OPEC on Tuesday, IEA yesterday, upgraded their demand for world oil consumption this year. You can see that here on slide 14 in today's deck. I put in the average forecast for the three major forecasters in the top right corner, and you can see the yellow line, which is global world demand, we're seeing the first pickup following 7 months of downgrades. So that's obviously happening at a time where, on the same day where we got another decent reduction in crude oil stocks in the US. So that's all just pointing to still to a second half of 2021, where demand is expected to be very, very strong. The problem, and Peter's already mentioned that, is India. In the bottom right, I just entered that chart from Bloomberg this morning, just highlighting how this is basically almost getting out of control right now. India is the top three fuel consuming nation in the world, and that's it's clearly having a potential impact. So again, we're still struggling with the market where we've got a short-term headwinds against a potential longer-term tailwind. And the question right now is whether we can basically create a foothold above 65.5, as you can see on the chart here in Brent crude.
Yeah, and then in foreign exchange, a couple of stories. We're all over the map here to a degree, and we need to get back to that Coinbase in a moment. But just following on from the moves in oil, interesting to see the Russian ruble having a very weak time of it and a pretty crazy week. So we had, and you can see on slide 6, the dollar ruble chart. We had earlier this week what seemed like an overture from the Biden administration to have some sort of summit between President Biden and Russian President Putin, which the market took as a very positive sign. So we saw the rubles strengthening quite sharply. But then overnight, Bloomberg running a story that as early as today, we could see the announcement of new sanctions against Russia based on accusations of hacking around the elections or and influencing around the elections, as well as the big SolarWinds hack. The sanctions could be against individuals. I don't think that's much of an issue, but the bigger issue being that U.S. financial institutions could be prevented from holding any new Russian debt from official sources. So the finance ministry, central bank, sovereign wealth funds, et cetera. So pretty nervous time there for Russian ruble traders. And again, doubly interesting because it's the opposite direction of what oil prices were doing. And there was already a quite large geopolitical attention discount in the Russian ruble. It's certainly a story worth tracking and what sanctions are announced later today. And then on the commodity theme as well, it all looks fine and dandy. We saw, of course, this the U.S. Treasuries yields easing lower. on the back of the big CPI number and the treasury bond auction being fairly orderly. And that's inspired commodity currencies as well as just about every currency versus the dollar to rally. So on slide 7, you can see that Aussie dollar poking above the local resistance level there. It, you know, obviously needs to hold that break above, let's call it 76.50 to 75 and follow through here. Got some support overnight from strong iron ore prices. On the other hand, you have the Chinese authorities with their tighter policy as one issue. And secondly, just keeping things a bit uncertain and confusing here, we kind of were thinking of gold as a good leading indicator for the whole theme of real rates and something like perhaps Aussie dollar also coming back higher. And gold has just not done much. It needs to pop another $30 higher for and take out that key resistance to see at least if it is still a leading indicator, or at least a coinciding indicator to suggest a broader interest in this reignition of the negative real rates or the increasingly negative real rates theme and the weaker dollar. So, you know, it all looks good for the dollar bears here. I just have a few question marks sort of lurking in the background. And then back to you, actually, I'll say, let's round out the fixed income story before we go back to all things crypto. We haven't really done anything in the treasuries. We've seen that one key sort of event risk come and go, and yes, yields poked back lower, but what's your take here? What's the next steps, do you think, for U.S. treasuries? And you have a slide, slide 11, where you're looking at U.S. treasury, the 10-year again.
Yes, John, I think that at this point, yesterday emerged a news that is particularly important to understand the direction of U.S. treasuries. And that news is about the infrastructure stimulus bill that Biden is planning to pass through. It seems that there is a senior Republican senator that has a cheaper option and wants basically to lobby for that one. So the thing here, John, is that if we see kind of a smaller infrastructure stimulus, that could have an impact also on inflation expectations and also where treasuries can go from here. So we might see a longer consolidation period between 1.6% and 1.75% as we have seen right now before yields break that resistance line at 1.75%. And just going back on our conversation that we just had before about junk corporate bonds in the US, if US Treasury yields continue to trade range bound, that's positive for junk bonds as well. So yesterday in slide 11, you have highlighted that we have seen a small uptick in junk bond spreads. Well, I think that that uptick is nothing to worry about as long as we have US Treasuries trading range bound.
All right, we'll see what happens there. Certainly very few signs in terms of stringing any number of days together of any concerns at all in the credit space. Financial condition is still very generous. Let's get back to Coinbase, Peter. I'll bring you back in the conversation. I put up the intraday chart of the Coinbase equity on its first day of trading, where you see it started trading around 380, went as high as 429. We're on slide 4, by the way. And dumped all the way down to around 310, 315 before closing day 330. So basically some $100 off the highs of the day. I believe the market cap around $65 billion, if I recall, looking at a chart this morning. So not really what the hypers were looking for, I guess, from this IPO. What's your take on that? And then as well, there's a connection with the ARK investment we were talking about before the call.
Yeah, so... I think most people would characterize it as a pretty successful IPO, though. I know what you're hinting at, John, but I think most would say it's pretty successful. Just for comparison, I mean, if you look at the London Stock Exchange, we just had a couple of weeks ago, we had Deliveroo, one of these delivery companies. They did a direct listing as well, just below 400 pence, I think 390 pence per share, and that's trading down today at 265. So I think the reference price that was set for this direct listing for Coinbase was seen actually at the low end. Demand was very high, but you said correctly, and the demand throughout the session was not strong, and it actually pulled down Bitcoin as well, and that was despite, as you said, ARK Invest, you know, this New York-based investment management firm that we have been talking so much about, they with Cassie Wood, they were betting heavily on Coinbase and were selling off yesterday some of their Tesla holdings. So it seems like she's doubling down on her exposure or her belief in cryptocurrencies. And as we talked about before we went on this podcast, I'll be writing about this today. I think it's worthwhile having that question out there, whether, you know, is this Coinbase IPO, is that really some kind of a Rubicon that we've crossed here in terms of crypto? Because the crypto industry, now the Coinbase exchange, etc., also the total market value of crypto coins, it's getting to a size, and the rhetoric also by the CEO and co-founder yesterday by Coinbase, you know, he wants to give economic freedom to everyone, and the massive marketing campaigns everywhere on cryptocurrencies, and just this sure narrative that crypto is the replacement of the fiat currency, and the current government money and central banking is all evil and wrong. It's such an attack on the existing system that you have to ask yourself whether some very heavy regulation or clampdown is coming. And that obviously is the key risk if you buy Coinbase shares at this point. And then also, as we mentioned in our IPO preview on Coinbase, that their fees are as high as 1.4%, so 140 basis points. That's almost 100 times more than what you pay for an S&P 500 futures contract. So the big question is, can they really continue to have these very high transaction fees? Obviously, your price could go down, and then your quantity and volume can go up. But we will have to see where we go from here. But and then keep in mind that there is a very high correlation in this industry to the Bitcoin price itself. So I expect volatility to be extremely high.
And do you want to talk about your basket of that you're releasing or that you have noted there?
Yeah, it's on slide 5. We're rolling out these different theme baskets, and we cannot ignore the crypto, and we call it blockchain because you could have sort of both companies or companies doing both, either cryptos in one shape or another, or something more application based on blockchain. And we have found, with the help of Mass, our crypto analyst, we found this group of companies that are doing everything from crypto mining to, you know, selling mining equipment. There are brokers there. There's also banks. There's some crypto services. There are, so for instance, a company called MicroStrategy, which is more like an investment firm because they just have the majority of the value of the company is basically just holding crypto. And then we have put in Coinbase now because they went because they did the IPO. So this is something that we'll be launching today, and we're beginning to track. But it's going to be an extremely volatile basket. But it's out there for inspiration. I still think there's a huge uncertainty around where crypto will be over the coming years with potential regulation coming. But it's out there, and you can find your inspiration and see if you want to have some exposure to this industry.
All right, and then we had the first key earnings coming in this week yesterday. The Teladoc stock you were noting. It looks like they delayed their earnings report, but more interesting perhaps is the Wells Fargo, a very retail-oriented bank, their results yesterday, which got quite a reaction.
Yeah, you can see on slide 8, their shares were up 5%, very strong underlying earnings growth. They are ahead of the curve in terms of what's called the efficiency ratio, also known as the cost-income ratio here in Europe. So it looks like the turnaround with this new CEO is going very well. On the other hand, JP Morgan had a bad session, as you can see. They were pulling back loan loss reserves, and that was driving the beat on the net income side. And then there was a strong result as well in the investment banking division. That was not a big surprise, but it was Jamie Dimon's comments that loan demand seems very weak in the US. And maybe it's not that big of a surprise given all the stimulus that are and government checks that are coming. I mean, it's probably, you know, substituting some of that potential demand that could have been for loans, because it's just handouts from the government instead. So you know, investors were not in particular impressed by JP Morgan Chase yesterday.
And then yeah, today we've got sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to continue and end this earnings spiel because we continue today with more financials, Bank of America, Citigroup. But I think actually Charles Schwab is most more interesting because of that retail participation that is declining. We're seeing fewer and retail investors really, you know, hitting the bottoms on stocks. So I'm curious to see what they say about this trend. And then Delta Airlines, of course, with the reopening of the U.S. economy and the trajectory on the vaccines. How do they see mobility going forward? That's, I think, is worth having a look at as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of the participation for the day trader type mentality has switched over to the crypto space. So very interesting there. Ola, let's round out your commodity outlook, which we didn't do earlier, with a look at grains. I think very interesting what's going on there, and certainly.
Exactly, John. I just want to, you can just read a bit more on that on our daily quick take, market quick take, which we publish every day on analysis.sax. So I'll just keep it brief. Weather concerns in South America, North America, Europe, and Canada, all adding to the price rally we've seen over the recent months. Corn futures trading near the highest level in 8 years, with the general index near a 4-year high. So weather is really just going to be a key driver as we head into these planting and growing months. So the sector it remains really firmly supported by the prospect of lower supply. And then also just want to highlight copper, which moved higher yesterday as the as Goldman's raised their target for 2025 by 66% from current levels. It did add a little bit of buying into the market, but I think in the short term we need to be probably more concerned about liquidity tightening in China, which is obviously the world's biggest consumer.
All right. And looking at macro calendars to end the call here, we have a lot of U.S. data up today, a couple of the regional manufacturing surveys for April already, the weekly claims numbers, which continue to be interesting on a moving average basis, and then the March retail sales. And I just want to highlight that I put a slide up just showing the zany course of the retail sales month to month as we get the pandemic first and then the stimulus checks, et cetera. You can see that on slide 10. This is the... this is the data series of the X auto and gas, or so the core retail sales, and just look, contrast what's going on lately with what I've circled there, which was the great financial crisis. It almost doesn't even register on the longer term chart. Whereas what we're seeing now are these crazy jumps. Again, as stimulus checks rolled out in March, they were a bit late in the month, so we could get a little bit of follow through into April, but you have to ask yourself what happens in May, June, July, when we're not getting these kinds of impulses. Are these pent-up savings that are from previous rounds of stimulus going to be released into the economy, or are we at risk of a sort of second half hangover? So I think that'll be an interesting theme to watch and how the market reacts. As well, Turkish Central Bank, I don't want to go too much into that, but very interesting key for EM traders up at 11 GMT today. Watch out for that one. First meeting with the new central bank chief there. And then overnight, we'll have the Chinese GDP and other data as China keeps its policy tight. That's a wrap for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.